Good afternoon, everyone. I am Hank Jones. You are listening to Hank Jones Poly Sports here at Global Patriot Radio Network on blogtalkradio.com. It is Wednesday, November the 10th, 2021, 5:33 after the intro songs. And as always, every Wednesday, I am here, and you can listen. You can even take part. There are other shows here. Mondays, Vito and Big Al, the Vito Esposito Show, Mama Mia No Sharia. Tuesdays, Eric is in with The Cross and the Crescent. Indy Hawk's asking. I'll answer his question later. Wednesdays, it's me, Hank Jones. Thursdays, Paul Sutliff with the Sutliffian Report. All those three go at 6 p.m. Eastern Time. Fridays, Andrew Herod with Conservative Casual Friday. That's usually anywhere between 12, or shouldn't I say 11 a.m. and 3 p.m. Eastern Time, just depending on the guests that he has on. Saturday nights from 10 p.m. to midnight, Minister Usama Dakduk and the beautiful Christie revealing the truth about Islam. And then Sundays, Eric is back, Real Interfaith Dialogue. And as always, that's when you have to download the app. But Eric tells it like it is. He pulls zero punches. If you want to listen online, it's real easy. Blogtalkradio.com. Click on live. And then when you get to the next screen, look down below and look for Global Patriot Radio. And it'll tell you. You've got so many chatters here in the room at a given time. Hey, you can also call in. 319-527-6706. You do that, you can listen, you can hit the one on your phone. I get a little icon that tells me someone wants to talk. There'll be a couple doing that later on when we get into our college football forum and follies with the unofficial crew. As always, you can email me, hjpsports1980@gmail.com. I'm on Twitter at HPolySports, Facebook, Hank Jones PolySports. But again, the coolest way, if you're not doing it online, is to dial in 319-527-6706. That way you can listen, but you can also talk. You hit the one on your phone, this little icon, cool little icon pops up, and I know, hey, someone wants to talk. My wife and our little Aussie are here in Electric Hankland Studios. And as always, prayers for those that need them, thinking particularly of Sue, who lost her mom last week, Sue from New Mexico, G-Ski, who's having some medical challenges, Annie, who's also had some family stuff going on, and others that need them. Please, if you ever know of anything, let me know. I would love to mention them. I would love to make sure people are praying for them. Hey, next week, we will have a guest on the show. I found her on Twitter. Her name is Karma Girl, and she took part in the Arizona forensic audit. And this was the tweet that I saw that someone I follow liked. And so I said, you know what? I like that. So I asked, and she said, yeah, why not? So ask, you shall receive. And here was her tweet from about a week or two ago. It said basically this. Well, that's the vaccine tweet. That's a different one. But here's what she said. After spending 8 weeks as a volunteer for the Arizona forensic audit, I will never trust another election moving forward. Until 2020 is fixed and the diamonds are returned, it's all BS to me. Sorry, just stating facts as I know what I witnessed going through thousands of ballots. Now, look, I'm not asking her to overturn the election. Not asking her to prove anything, but I just want to have her tell us her experiences with the Arizona forensic audit. She also put out a video on it, so go over and take a look. Her Twitter is at KarmaGirl0, I believe. Let me just double check. Yeah, KarmaGirl0, and it could be a capital O, but I think it's a zero. You know, that's a weird thing. You never know what. You know, you look at stuff like, I got a password thing, you know, I reset a password on something, and I couldn't tell if it's an I or an L. And so when I was talking to tech support about it, he says, that's one of those tricky things. You just got to try both. And I'm like, what? How about explaining it or having it clear? I mean, for instance, when you get the VIN number off your car and, you know, your insurance company needs that or whatever, it's always a zero. There is no O in a VIN number. They flat out tell you that so that you never have to deal with that. You just, if there's an O, it's a zero. Always. Always. Okay, let us get to our obituaries for this past week. Last Wednesday, Tom Matty was a professional football player, also a college football player. He played for the Baltimore Colts. He was a Super Bowl champion in the 1971 season. Tom Matty passed away at the age of 82 of leukemia. And then the next day, Mike Pitts, also a former NFLer, a defensive end for several teams, he passed away. No cause was listed. And then on Saturday, Sean Roden, age 46, he was a Jamaican-American bodybuilder. He was Mr. Olympia in 2018. He passed away of a heart attack. He was the oldest Mr. Olympia winner ever at age 43, but kind of fell from grace after allegations of sexual assault, along with some allegations of infidelity in his rather short marriage. Yeah, I'm sure it had nothing to do with steroids. And, I don't mean to speak ill, but, you know, heart attack at that age and those guys, yeah, they're built bodybuilders. Don't tell me, get me wrong. They are athletes, et cetera, but most of them are using some help of some sort. And plus, you know, they bulk up. They're carrying a lot more weight than their body probably is really accustomed to. Also that day, former football player and pro wrestler Angelo Mosca passed away at age 84 from complications of Alzheimer's disease. Now, he worked in both the WWF and the Canadian portion of the old NWA. He actually made news in 2015. He was at a CFL, Canadian Football League alumni luncheon, and he took his cane and whacked former quarterback Joe Capp over the head with it. Would love to have been there, seen that. Actor Dean Stockwell passed away Sunday. Natural causes. He was age 85. He's best known, obviously, for his movie Married to the Mob and for the TV series he was on, Quantum Leap. He was like the handler of Scott Bakula's character. I never really watched that show, but it was a cool concept. Former Georgia Senator Max Cleland passed away yesterday at 79 from heart failure. He lost his legs below the knee as well as his right forearm when he was serving in Vietnam. He was considered a centrist by his fellow Democrats. For instance, he did support the invasion of Iraq, and he was pro-free trade, but he was also pro-choice and pro-environment. So rest in peace to those folks and others that we have lost. Okay, let's get to some items. Last week there was a story out last Friday on Yahoo. I know, Yahoo, but it's my email provider. It has been from time immemorial. They reprinted it from the New York Times, which explains why I saw it on Yahoo. In other words, I rarely, if ever, go to the New York Times willingly. Anyway, this article was titled, Big Donors Financed Biden's 2020 Run. Now they get a chilly reception. And it's part of what we might legitimately call the first step to President Kamala Harris. Alternatively, it's big media publicly acknowledging that the party of the rich is really the Democratic Party, not the Republican Party, as they claim. Article quotes, for one, an Orlando ambulance chaser attorney named John Morgan, who laundered money, he's called a major bundler for the Biden campaign back in 2019. Morgan said, and I quote, there is a basic chorus, which is, we're forgotten and discarded. It's very discouraging. We don't exist. Now, having lived in Orlando, that dude is all over commercial television. For the People, go to forthepeople.com if you don't know who this guy is. I mean, in addition to being an ambulance chaser, this guy is an attention whore like you wouldn't believe it. He's extremely liberal. Can't tell you really how I know, but just a family member who worked in the hospitality industry, let's say. He used to come in. He couldn't even drive anymore. He got busted outside a strip club years ago and headbutted a cop and somehow got out of it. But he doesn't even drive anymore. He's got to be driven around because all he cares about is drinking. Hey, nothing wrong with that. You want to drink? I drink myself. But, I mean, this guy's a mess. But he, somehow he has parlayed it into being – a top-notch ambulance chaser. From what I understand, he doesn't even hear or try cases. He sells them off to people. Anyway, the article then goes on to list a bunch of major donors and or bundlers who range from feelings of anger to withholding funds until certain legislation is passed, to outright withholding of donations, to, believe it or not, just accepting it. Ironically, a couple from the Obama administration said it's proper that donors get no preferential treatment. A couple of people from the Obama administration actually said that. Others pulled the de facto default, i.e. blame Trump. Now, there have been some virtual events, apparently, but the chief concerns appear to be there's no person at La Dopi Nostra with whom to discuss all this and get further info to. In-person events that were promised for different donation levels, whether they be $100,000, $250,000, et cetera, they have not taken place. And, of course, really important, whether or not there will be a holiday party for the donors to attend this year. The answer to that last one, by the way, is that, quote, the decision, according to people briefed on the matter, remains under discussion. End quote. We really are starting to see bits and pieces of disappointment with La Dopi Nostra among some of the folks in greater Big Left. And true to form, the dissension ranges from hostage holding unless certain legislation is passed to complaints that the administration is not progressive enough. Now, rarely do we hear big media or big tech want a standard set of rules or observation of rules as befits their personal agenda. Here's the irony. Donors in this all seem to be focused on, quote, voting rights. They don't say anything about rules or laws being observed. They don't want to ensure fair and legitimate elections. Oddly, in a time where information is available 24/7, 365, they want to expand voting windows and allow post-election voting in order to correct any negative outcomes, by the way. They don't want to make sure elections are legal, legitimate, or open to the concept that whoever wins, wins legally and without fraud. You know, these people love the filibuster, for instance, until it doesn't suit them. They decry Republican presidents and governors issuing executive orders, yet they issue them at record-setting paces when they are the ones in said offices. They have no issue spending money that the country doesn't have in order to spend on pie-in-the-sky feel-good projects that are proven failures. And top that, they let American companies be sold to the red Chinese and prioritize their interests over American interests. Yeah, parting shot, if you will, which kind of sums up the utter contempt I have for the DNC and Big Left. It comes from this article. It says, quote, for now, one Democratic fundraiser has advised donors that DNC stands for Do Not Contribute, at least until the party figures out how it will be more responsive to its contributors. And it goes on to say, still, the DNC continues to amass cash and has nearly $75 million in its coffers. That, folks, just about says it all about the DNC. They're full of cash, but they lust for more. That sort of makes them the current version of the mafia, I guess you'd say. I'll explain that later. A former NFL running back and NBA point guard will fight for real, on the undercard of the Jake Paul-Tommy Fury fight on December 18th. The Paul-Fury fight is also supposed to be for real. Not sure. Jake Paul and his brother Logan Paul, they're like YouTube fighters or something, and then they put people in the ring. And one of them, I forgot which one, fought Floyd Mayweather earlier this year, lost, but acquitted himself well, supposedly, but whatever. Anyway, former Miami Hurricane and multi-team NFL running back Frank Gore, age 38, he'll lace up the gloves and take on former Fighting Illini and NBA point guard Deron Williams, who is 37. Now, Gore has trained in boxing for years, and he actually turned down, allegedly, several NFL teams this year in order to concentrate on his first sanctioned boxing match. Williams has been a longtime fight sports enthusiast. He's trained for years in MMA-type sports. He's a part owner of the Fortis MMA gym in Dallas. Gore is third in NFL history with 16,000 rushing yards. But people didn't know that. Many of you didn't. He spent 16 years in the league, so that kind of tells you, number one, he's a tough SOB. And given that running backs typically last about 3 years in the league, I'd say quintuply tough. Williams is a three-time NBA All-Star. He was part of the U.S. gold medal teams in the 2008 and 2012 Olympics, as well as being the point guard on that 2005 NCAA runner-up team for the Illini, remember? Went through the season undefeated, lost in the Big Ten championship game to Ohio State. Then they went through and had one. They had a big comeback against Arizona. Anyway, just to get to the final game and lose to UNC. Anyway, he left after that season. He declared for the NBA draft a year early. Now, both of them have legit trainers and managers, and it sounds like they're both heavy into the fight sports. They're fighting at a weight limit of 215 pounds. Now, while one might think Frank Gore's got the advantage as a football player, you know, that appears, you know, more bruising and brawling than basketball, Williams has a huge height advantage. He's coming in at 6'3". Frank Gore, no relation to Al Gore, is at 5'9". Now, hell, even Mike Tyson lists out as 5'10", but hell, we'll see. Actually, I'm starting to get interested in boxing again, actually, given the recent the Tyson Fury Deontay Wilder rematch, Alexander Usyk upsetting Anthony Joshua for a couple of, I guess, the WBA, WBO, and IBF titles. Fury holds the WBC and the lineal titles. By the way, lineal is a title. It's a convoluted concept. It says that the title holder beat the actual lineal title holder, which they have somehow kept track of since way back before the onset of all the different belts and all the different alphabet organizations in the sport of boxing. Anyway, it probably has more titles than pro wrestling these days, which is saying something, given all the different titles that wrestling likes to hang on their people. I do got to get me one of those fake title belts, though, you can buy. Those are cool. Those title belts are cool. Wear it around the house and whatnot. Do my Ric Flair imitation interviews. Yeah, good stuff. New Hampshire Governor Chris Sununu, Republican governor, many thought he would run for Senate in 2022. He's decided to run for re-election as New Hampshire governor. And of course, if you believe Yahoo as a purveyor of legit news versus the reigning champion of hyperbole, they say it's the death knell for the GOP. Seriously, Yahoo. They actually put that on their front page with the title, New Hampshire Governor Delivers Blow to GOP 2022 Hopes. Yeah, so much for reality and, like, any modicum of normalcy. Despite the confusion regarding Aaron Rodgers' vaccinated versus immunized status, remember he told everyone last summer he was immunized? Fact is, he is currently on the COVID protocol list until at least this Saturday. He said in his weekly appearance on the Pat McAfee show that he stands by his comments, and his assertion is that he is allergic to the mRNA vaccines and that he is consulting with many more people than just Joe Rogan, as some of the media have implied. He further stated he is neither an activist nor a poster boy or spokesperson for the unvaccinated, but rather he's just an athlete. Now, here's where the news gets kind of good. State Farm, for which he actually is a spokesperson, they've stood by Aaron Rodgers on his vaccine stances. They've said basically, essentially, that it's his right to vaccinate or not vaccinate, and that whether or not he gets vaccinated, that will never be a determining factor in whether or not they employ individuals as spokespersons. The current Jake from State Farm is probably safe. No idea where the original or any previous Jake from State Farm portrayers are these days or the status of their vaccination. Oh, and I don't care, by the way. I do wish, though, is that they would hire someone to vocalize their jingle that Lake a Good Neighbor State Farm is here, because even Carol Channing would sound better than the current Jake from State Farm. He's not good. Nationwide had that guy, what was his name, Leslie Odom Jr.? I think he might have even been in Hamilton, but they had him sing some of their commercials a couple of years ago. Get him. I mean, he's good. Okay, here it goes. This is my first official tryout and audition. Like a good neighbor, State Farm. No, that's not good, is it? Not so good. E. Balboa sort of said, I do what I do because I can't sing a dance. Remember that? Anyway, speaking of Rocky Balboa, tomorrow is the re-release, or I guess it's actually the ultimate director's cut release of Rocky IV. Look, I like the movie and all. I do, despite Dolph Lundgren mimicking the Hunchback of Notre Dame, and despite the fact that, in spite of being extremely hot, Brigitte Nielsen couldn't act her way out of a paper bag. She wouldn't cut it on a Saved by the Bell spinoff. I mean, she was awful. No, but I mean, I do like it. I like number one, I like the Psych Up tune wasn't Bill Conti or wasn't Survivor. Okay, at this juncture, I'm going to have a little contest. I don't expect anybody to really take advantage, but free 5 minutes of airtime to anyone who can call in and give me the song and the artist within the next 2 minutes. Give me the song and the artist of the main Psych Up tune in Rocky IV. Timer starting now. You can tell me what other song or film in which the artist made his or her mark. Anyway, okay, I saw a video stream or whatever of Sly Stallone talking about the subtle differences. I got to tell you, it didn't seem that much different or impactful. Like one of the things, the towel falls differently, and it hits the canvas at the very same time that Apollo's head does. Oh, okay. I figured it appeared at different times because they showed Apollo's head falling, and then they showed Rocky dropping the towel. Oh, he also thinks if he went back and did it all over, he'd have Apollo survive and be like Rocky's mentor since Mickey was gone. He'd do it from his wheelchair. Seriously, he said that. Now, all I can say to that is, remember, Polly couldn't even get through the snowdrifts to that gulag they had as a cabin out there. I'm not sure how Apollo was going to pull it off in a wheelchair or like even a souped-up scooter. I mean, you know what? Just when you think the Rocky voice is an act and Stallone maybe isn't dumb, he drops one of those stupid statements on us. I mean, okay, he didn't go this far. He didn't. I mean, like, I was expecting something like, oh, yeah, the original idea was for Apollo like to hit a jackpot on one of them slots before the fight. But there'd be like some kind of silver line to the whole dying thing. No, he didn't say that. I made that part up. He would have said that, though, if he thought of it before me. I mean, he really drops some dumb stuff sometimes. I like the guy. He's a good actor. He's not a bad actor. He seems like he's probably a pretty good guy. But, you know, bizarre. Why a director's cut of Rocky IV? Oh, here's a good thing, though. In this version, that stupid robot that Paulie has, gone. No stupid Paulie robot. So there's that. Okay, yeah, as if current gas prices aren't bad enough, the White House confirmed that Dopey Joe, or rather his puppet master, is studying the impact of shutting down a crucial gas pipeline that runs between Michigan and Canada. It's called the Enbridge 5 pipeline. It carries up to 23 million gallons of oil per day, but it's the target of the Enviro wackos and the tribal nations, evidently. It comes to the U.S. via the Strait of Mackinac. Now, in fact, Michigan Governor Gretchen Whitmer ordered it to be shut down, but a court order resulting from a lawsuit has kept it open. Deputy Press Secretary Karine Jean-Pierre, who actually makes Umgen Umsaki look like a beacon of truth, well, she backtracked yet again when she was pressed by certain media outlets. Remember, she was the one, the word came out that of the $450K that they were going to give to each immigrant, on behalf of each immigrant child that was separated from its parents, and then Umgen and Dopey Joe both said, oh, no, that's not happening. Well, then Karine Jean-Pierre was the one, she doubled back on that reversal by saying, yes, the La Dopey Nostra $450K to illegals, that's still on the table. She also said there was no truth to the potential pipeline shutdown. But she was pressed hard by a couple media outlets, and finally she got pressed to the point she was saying, well, yeah, there actually is a study about shutting it down by the Corps of Engineers. I swear to God, there is literally no semblance of competent, honest America First leadership looking out for us in Washington, D.C. Seriously, My wife and I paid $3.12 a gallon last night. And that's with a Sam's Club membership. What about people who have no access to a Sam's or a Costco? Or worse, they live in areas where gas prices are already much higher or there are fewer gas stations. So yeah, that's bringing the price of $4 a gallon or more. What the hell? We were literally below $2 a gallon a year or so ago. Now, add to that, the price of beef has almost doubled since COVID. Oh, and by the way, many of the beef packing companies are owned by companies out of Red China. Chicken wings are $4 a pound. How in hell are we supposed to eat? Seriously, I mean, this is no longer about my initial thought. Remember I talked about ask them to resign? This is no longer about writing to your representatives and your senators. This is about getting all sane and like-minded people to just flat-out march on our local, state, and federal leaders. This is about demanding accountability from not only our elected and appointed leaders, but also about marching on our corrupt and dishonest media. This is about getting leadership and lawmaking and edicts out of the hands of these freaking elites on both sides. Belongs. I mean, I am damn tired of hearing about how woke our military has gotten, or people voting on science. Remember when science was irrefutable? Now they're voting on it. I'm tired of hearing about the erosion of our individual rights and our freedoms. I'm tired of wondering whether or not the Constitution is even recognized in our halls of power. I'm particularly tired of lawyers and judges who have turned our legal system into a marketplace where they literally whore themselves out to the highest bidder or bidders. Look, I'm all for Bill Gates getting rich. I'm even willing to help the bastard out by buying his computers, his operating systems, some of his software, except for that stupid Edge browser. That's a notable exception. I will not use that thing. Look, I don't mind Google or Amazon or Facebook or Twitter making its founders and leaders boatloads of money. And again, I'll buy in. If it makes my life better, more organized, simpler, more manageable, whatever, that's fine. But when these bastards then use that wealth to erode my rights, compromise my freedom, or buy up elections or officials, no, screw that. Enough. And frankly, we need to be tired of it together. You know, we can no longer allow people like Jack Dorsey to decide what constitutes biased or unbiased or true or false or moral or immoral. We can no longer let Mark Zuckerberg determine how our elections will be conducted or pick and choose which votes count the most and where. We got to stop allowing Google and YouTube to act in collusion with government officials in order to pursue and or put forth personal ideologies, especially when it comes at our expense. The time is now. I'm sorry, it's now. Because no longer, we can't allow a government to weaponize our military and our law enforcement officials against us, while at the same time they take control of what our children are taught in school against our wishes or beliefs or standards. Damned if I'll let some corrupt, demented, drooling asswipe from Delaware tell me whether or not I must vaccinate, wear a mask, or force coworkers or neighbors into being shamed to get a vaccine or wear a mask. He certainly made America miserable. He's made me almost want to beat up any kid who comes by my house to trick-or-treat or sell cookies or magazines. I'm tired of him. I'm tired of his kid, his puppet master. I'm tired of that disgusting tramp he doesn't even aware is his vice president. I mean, anyone, even you vax Nazis that think it's great to force people to get jabbed against their will, that it's okay to let this drooling, blithering, farting, pant-crabbing jackwagon to tell us that we must be mandatory vaccinated by January 4th, that's okay. But wait until after Thanksgiving and Christmas and New Year when person-to-person exposure will be at its highest. If you're of that mindset, you're a fool. That you don't question the hypocrisy or the contradictory nature of it, that makes you a fool. Remember when I said earlier this year that media and Big Left worked together to kind of condition the greater populace to the concept that Dopey Joe had won and we needed to hurry up and sort of get to it? Remember the Pennsylvania election official who conditioned us by saying, except that late arriving and absentee ballots would bring Biden to victory? Remember that? Or how about Pennsylvania and other states that told courts it was imperative to certify elections before December? Remember that? And then, of course, one of the courts mentioned that Pennsylvania that they didn't certify the 2016 election until December 12th. Remember that coup de grace of sorts? Remember when radio stations last year, they were playing Christmas music the day after the election? Remember that? Guess what? Where I live, there were about four or five stations that did that. Right now, there's one, exactly one, that's playing Christmas music. You want to know what was it? Urgency, perhaps? Maybe. But how about this? We've been told by various government and media that there will be shortages this Christmas. We've been told it will cost more to have Thanksgiving dinner, that it'll cost more to heat our homes. That's more conditioning, folks. If they gave a crap, they would do what they could. They would make sure that all pipelines are flowing. They would let American energy companies operate. So frankly, it's time. It's time we marched on these leaders, be they in government or media or education or sports. When some $20 million a year basketball player says you need to vaccinate, just say no. Tell him no. Turn off his game. Don't buy his jersey. Just save your money. Frankly, you're probably going to need every cent you have just to survive. When your kid's teacher sends home that note that Johnny needs to shut up and wear his mask and own up to being white and privileged or needs to stop that idiotic God nonsense, tell him or her or them no. Don't allow any school board superintendent or city council person to tell you that you need to let them teach the kids. You need to sit this one out. Tell all of them no. When some smarmy, egotistical medical mouthpiece gets on local or national news and tell you that you're killing your neighbors or you need to sacrifice for the common good, tell him or her no. Tell them no in uncertain terms, no uncertain terms. Tell them their willingness to forego actual science and allow our economy to be decimated, that constitutes an attack on your community, far more devastating than you forgetting to bring hand sanitizer with you to Home Depot. Indy Hawk asks a good question. How do we know if the roads around his house are racist? Yeah, can you believe that? Pete Buttigieg, Mayor Pete, actually said our roads had racism built into them. Yeah, tell these people that wearing a mask is obviously not that important in restaurants where they get $400 a plate, ultra-chic bars, hotels. It's not important there, so tell them. It isn't important at my backyard barbecue or at shopping malls. Tell them. With their collusion with our governments, they're responsible for ruined businesses, lost jobs, decimated dreams. They have ruined the lives of millions of children simply because they didn't have the integrity to tell elites and tell elected officials enough. This is a sham. This is a lie. Stop this nonsense now. Hey, sunny day, wishing the clouds away. Or in this case, it's wishing the crowds away. Yeah, the gang at Sesame Street, or more accurately, the PBS Reichstag, had the SS, or in this case, Sesame Street, had them appear on a CNN town hall. I guess it's called the CNN Beer Hall Initiative. The purpose was to push vaccine on kids, of course. Yep, Big Bird, Grover, and Oscar the Grouch appeared on what was a program called the ABCs of COVID Vaccines. Thank God I missed that. Apparently, CNN's resident purveyor of medical misinformation, Dr. Sanjay Gupta, he answered questions from the characters about all things COVID vaccine. Now, yeah, then the official Twitter accounts of the characters took to Twitter to post pro-vaccination messages all day. Yes, I know. Sesame Street characters having Twitter accounts. Actual people like President Donald Trump or Gateway Pundit founder Jim Hoft are banned from the platform. It's freaking insanity. Here's a tweet from Big Bird. I got the COVID-19 vaccine today. My wing is feeling a little sore, but it'll give my body an extra protective boost that keeps me and others healthy. Ms. @Erica R. Hill even said, I've been getting vaccines since I was a little bird. I had no idea. Yeah, not to be outdone, though, Oscar the Grouch's account tweeted, well, this stinks. Apparently the COVID-19 vaccines won't make you feel grouchy at all. That's what @KizzyPhD said at today's town hall anyway. You might get a sore arm and feel tired, so at least there's that. Texas Republican Senator Ted Cruz had the best response to that. Government propaganda for your 5-year-old. Okay, time out. Time freaking out. Let's start with this one. What 5-year-olds are on Twitter? Seriously, what tender, naive 5 to 11-year-old kid has a Twitter account? Or perhaps more bizarre, what freaking adult follows Sesame Street characters on Twitter? You know what, folks? It's crap like this that gives us 40-year-old teachers carrying on with their 12-year-old students. It's crap like this that gives us 35-year-old union-protected teachers who strip down to lingerie and send stripper dance videos to their 12-year-old hall monitors. Good God, what in hell has this come to? Please tell me I am losing my mind, and either this is a nightmare or we can bring in the gang from behind the camera to tell me this is all a joke and none of it actually happened. For God's sakes, if you're on Twitter and you're following Big Bird or Oscar the Grouch, get off your ass and get professional help. Look, I get it. It might come down to electroshock for you. But please, waste no time. Get to the professionals now before you end up in a church bell tower screaming incoherently and they have to come toss a net over your sorry ass. Man, I cannot get that out of my head now. Big Bird and Oscar the Grouch with Twitter accounts. What in the actual hell? Okay, so back to my mafia comment earlier about the DNC and et cetera. Look, while The Godfather and Goodfellas and The Sopranos and Married to the Mob and Casino, other movies and shows, they've offered varying levels of the ins and outs of mob life. They don't really tell us much of the mafia or the outfit or La Cosa Nostra itself. We can learn, whether it's from like books or news accounts or legal trials or, yes, mob informants and turncoats, i.e. those who become government witnesses. Those folks tell us how the mob, La Cosa Nostra, really worked. And one of the things we learn is how the government went after them. They failed for years. And then finally, they were able to severely curtail the mob's activities. If we look deeper, we start to see how much of government, particularly the DNC, has it's become its own version of the mafia. The mob used to earn tons of money in gambling. Local games, slot machines, fancy casinos. Yeah, they actually had them. Mob even got into Vegas and Atlantic City before government got onto them, by the way. The mob used union pension funds to invest in a lot of these casinos before government came in and busted much of union leadership and prevented access to these funds by the mob. Guess what? In addition to the Vegas and Atlantic City places, we have casinos all across the country now. Let's not forget, some of the biggest numbers operators, actually the biggest numbers operator out there these days, state governments, individually and collectively, yep, lotteries, scratch-off number, it doesn't matter, daily picks, Powerball, Mega Millions. When 7-Eleven sells a lottery ticket, guess how much they make? They make 5 cents a dollar. Then you got those riverboat gambling ships and those tribal casinos. Guess what? None of that's helping local communities. Yeah, remember those boys at the Teamsters or the AFL-CIO who looked like longshoremen, had bodyguards? Those guys are schmucks compared to the gang running our teachers' unions. And speaking of unions, does it not smack of irony that a government that so fervently claims to be working for us has to have unions for its employees? What the hell for? Why in hell does a government employee in the United States of America need a damn union representing him or her? But guess what? Guess who doesn't raid those pension funds? Correct, the mob doesn't. The union spends, though, they spend it on politics, or rather, the lion's share of it, on the DNC, because DNC promises them our money. DNC takes from our resources, hands it to government unions and people who don't work. And then when those unions and employees want more, they just take more from us. Remember when sports gambling was bad? Now they allow it and they collect taxes on it. Hell, Paul Castellano and Sam Giancana would be jealous if they saw how efficiently government took care of getting all that in motion. Prohibition? Government gets their money, their tax money on booze these days. In fact, you can't send a drop of hard alcohol out the door without paying the tax on each and every drop. That's before you're allowed to send it out the door and sell the first shot. Remember when loan sharks were considered evil? Yeah, now they take your money and give it to kids who can't get jobs after majoring in gender studies. By God, miss a payment on that student loan and the government hounds will get it out of a jobless kid with precision and paperwork that would leave Carlo Gambino in absolute awe. Gun running. Yeah, by God, the military-industrial complex does it far better than the mob ever did. Yeah, the hit, the Paul Castellano hit, is pretty pedestrian now that we have drones wiping folks off the map. What the hell? Just bill the taxpayers. Send a couple hundred grand to each of the family members of the illegals. Joe Bonanno, remember? Kind of a scumbag, though, he was. He called himself a man of honor. Guess what? The lowest street-level mob punk associate is far more honorable and has far more integrity than the average D.C. bureaucrat. Oh, and yeah, you want to know this? You want to know how government, particularly the FBI, found sympathy with we the people against the mob? You know what they did? They supplied information, often false information, to quote-unquote friendly journalists around the country, major news outlets. They would detail mob ownership of companies and industries. Guess what? Much of it was false. You know what else the FBI did? They would withhold pertinent info at murder trials. Four people in Boston went to prison for a murder they didn't commit. The FBI not only knew that, they withheld it from both the prosecution and the defense attorneys. Yeah, two of those guys died in prison. I'm not saying they were angels. You know what one FBI agent said when he was confronted on the witness stand? He asked, what did the court expect, an apology or remorse? Yeah. We like to think FBI malfeasance and corruption is recent, that it started under Obama. Unfortunately, that's not the case. In fact, it's but a symptom of the corruption and greed within our own government that has transformed it from a quasi-honorable institution to nothing more than the mafia that they spent almost a century trying to get rid of before they, for the most part, succeeded and took it over. End of that rant. Okay, now this bit of cheer from the Epic Times. Two ranking Republicans, one from the House Transportation and Infrastructure Committee and one from the Aviation Subcommittee, have sent letters to FAA Administrator Stephen Dixon and TSA Administrator David Pekoski. They are concerned that we are approaching a perfect storm of mandates, already existing worker shortages, and impending firings and resignations that, coupled with increased travel demand during the holidays, will lead to major delays. More importantly, it could also lead to increased security issues. The two separate letters noted that the already fragile state of air transportation, given recent delays and cancellations. Now, Representative Sam Graves of Missouri and Garrett Graves of Louisiana, no relation, by the way, they noted that while both the FAA and the TSA say they are confident as the federal employee vax deadline nears on November 22nd, Dixon from the FAA testified last week before a Senate panel that he was not aware of any staffing problems. Now, compounded that with the order that allows federal agencies to punish workers as of yesterday. Yeah, roughly 2 weeks before the mandate, they can start punishing workers. Yet Dixon testified that the agency is still catching up on collecting employee vaccination information. He also said delays are more likely the result of airlines not having all furloughed employees back, while at the same time there has been an uptick in travel demand to Florida. Yeah, Dixon said that the airlines currently have not much buffer in their schedules. Yeah, a lot of buffers. Yes, Senator, lots of buffers. And that they are still in catch-up mode and that things like convective weather events exacerbate those issues. Yes, Senator, lots of buffers. Some better news from Wisconsin. Kyle Rittenhouse, he's the teenager that was charged with multiple counts of homicide during that unrest in Kenosha, remember, after the police shot convicted criminal Jacob Blake. Kyle Rittenhouse took the stand today. Now, while he may not have humiliated prosecution attorneys, he certainly held his own. The judge went after the prosecution again. In all reality, the case was kind of blown early on when prosecutors and the FBI admitted there was footage that showed, at a minimum, that he was defending himself and, frankly, that he was under attack from those scumbags who, by the way, have all day and night to attack police and burn businesses, amass pallets of bricks while most of us have to work. In addition, prosecution witness Gage Grosskreutz all but admitted he was aiming a gun at Kyle Rittenhouse before the teen fired his AR-15 at Grosskreutz, blowing away part of Grosskreutz's right forearm. Hawkeye Mike can't be on the show today, but he did tell me this week that prosecutors can be some of the most smarmy and arrogant folks on the planet. The fact that the prosecution pushed this case through has nothing to do with the merits of the case. It has everything to do with arrogance and entitlement and intimidation. Meanwhile, in Georgia, law enforcement testimony contradicted several statements from the defendants in the murder trial of Ahmaud Arbery, including the fact one defendant's story changed literally between his on-scene interview and his interview at the precinct. Yeah, why this didn't attract prosecutors to filing charges is a damn mystery, if you ask me. Hopefully these three defendants get put away for a while. I mean, they literally pursued. I mean, they chased Ahmaud Arbery for blocks. They cornered him. They held him at gunpoint before they murdered him. That poor young man did nothing wrong. They couldn't even get their story straight on why they were pursuing him. Unbelievable. Hey, we're going to take a break with a little music. And when we come back, the crew minus Hawkeye Mike will be here to talk some college football. Hawkeye's getting back in the win column, for one thing. So since I'm talking about mafia, let's enjoy a little music from a gangster movie from Once Upon a Time in America. This is the great, legendary, late great, legendary Ennio Morricone. Be back in 2 minutes plus. Sports, the number to call, 319-527-6706, and one of our college football crew is here. Indy Hawk, how you doing?
I'm doing well. How you doing, Hank?
Oh, pretty good. Got a win last weekend. You know, I can't get too mad at that.
We'll take it.
Brother Tommy's in. I don't know where T. Bodie's. I mean, I see T. Bodie on the phone, but he hasn't hit his one to come in, so come on, dude. Well, I'll just put him on in case he doesn't hit it and forgets. T. Bodie, you there? Sounds like he is, but he's not listening. So, Indy, what kind of surprises did you see last week?
I'm here.
Oh, T-Bone's here. Well, let's start with Indy. What surprised you last weekend?
Well, I don't know. The Iowa game was pretty interesting with Padilla coming in and getting it going. So that was good to see.
Definitely. How about you, Brother Tommy?
Illinois beating Minnesota, biggest surprise on the docket as far as I was concerned.
Really? How about you, T-Boney? Biggest surprise.
Did Iowa win?
Really?
Yeah.
So nobody is surprised by Purdue beating Michigan State?
No, I called it.
No, they've got a good
That's
defense.
Right. A couple of you did call it. That's true. So,
I might have picked that, Hank.
Yeah, I think you did. You did. Playoff rankings came out last night. I'm looking at the wrong. I'm not seeing it. Let's see what I got here. I know there was a little bit of a shakeup. Georgia is still number one. In the AP, though, Cincinnati is number two. Ohio State's down at six. They're fourth in this one. Cincinnati's still fifth in the playoff rankings. Now, one group says Bama's out. I think that's on ESPN. They think Bama's out, but CFP rankings still have Bama at number two. So other than that, not much change. Purdue got in at 19. The Hawks moved up a couple. UTSA is now in after not having been ranked in by the CFP. Wisconsin, of course, is in ahead of us. So, you know, some teams dropped. Auburn dropped. A&M went up three spots. You know, not much in the way of change, but some changes. So, okay, observations about the Big Ten. We'll start with T-Bone. We'll start with you.
You know, I think that the East is going to have their hands full. I think that Michigan State should have been ranked ahead of Michigan, and I think that they eventually will. It's, you know, they just keep having each other to beat up on each week, and guess what? The West is doing it now, too. So,
yep.
You know, are all the teams in the West bad, or are they all good? Or average? I think that they're probably all average.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't think they're – I think there's some good teams, but yeah. Brother Tommy, what about you? What in the Big Ten
surprised
you? A couple
of things.
Okay, go ahead.
Well, I just could say a couple of things. Number one, I have Michigan, as you know, going to the CFP. I'm still going to hold to them this week, but ironically, they don't even rule their own destiny. The only one that needs to rule their own destiny is Michigan State and Ohio State. And the other one is – said at the beginning of the year, second team that Illinois beat shook up the things. They took away Minnesota's ability to write their own destiny, and they basically did it with Penn State too. So, you know, other than that, I kind of agree with T-Bodie. I'm not impressed with the West, a little bit with Wisconsin, but that's where the story ends. And I think the East is just right now just much better division.
Yeah. Andy, how about you?
Well, the Big Ten's quietly having a really, really good season. I mean, we got three of the top seven in the CFP, and Iowa, of course, is a fourth team that's been mentioned previously in the CFP. So, pretty good year overall. It's good to
definitely.
See.
Yeah. How about Nebraska with their bloodbath?
Yeah.
Andy, did you see that? Did you see what happened?
Yeah, he fired his offensive coaches in true Scott Frost fashion, I guess, huh? They give him one more year and he wipes out his offensive side.
I haven't even seen who's going to coach. Is he going to take all the offense over now the rest of the season?
Well, he had a lot of grad assistants. He had a lot of grad assistants. That's why he was getting in trouble. And I think those guys are all getting promoted to being the coaches that they've been actually been being anyhow, even though the grad assistant.
Oh, really?
Oh, that's a good sign.
Yeah. I guess. I mean, it's kind of like, I mean, seriously, who, three games left in the season and he fires four guys, four coaches. I mean, would you take a job there right now if he calls you up? I mean, unbelievable. I can't even, I mean, I thought the midseason firings of head coaches was bad. This is unbelievable, brutal. And he's got another year at least, so, you know.
Yeah, they told him to take him there.
I'm not sure what Trev Alberts is thinking, their athletic director. I'm really not. So, you know, nationally, Brother Tommy, did you see anything nationally that jumped out at you?
Not particularly, other than Georgia until Alabama will probably walk over Alabama, but I'm still got Alabama going. But Georgia's one of the most impressive teams I've seen in a while. And I'll comment on your former thing real quick. Four assistants, restructured contract with Frost, which, as we all know, means, all right, you're taking a $3 million pay cut. I think Nebraska football right now is an absolute unequivocal train wreck.
Yep.
I don't think they're going to be back for years, maybe decades, if ever. I think they're a train wreck. The way they're handling everything, the way they handle Pelini, everything they do, they handle in the exact bipolar opposite way that they should. Absolutely amazed. The guy's less than, 30% win percentage, and he's got the audacity to fire four assistant coaches. I just think they're an absolute train wreck.
Oh, I agree. I think that. So, you know, Andy, anything nationally that jumped out at you?
Well, just to piggyback on the Nebraska thing, they are a train wreck. It's obvious, but the way they're playing some good games. They lost what? I haven't looked lately, but at least five by one score or less. I mean, they're probably not far away. That's just a testament that they have serious talent there. I mean, that'd be a great place for another coach to come in, but it'll give them another year to destroy it the rest of the way.
Yeah, exactly. I'm not sure. I don't know. T. Bodie, what is your thoughts? I mean, do you have anything other than Nebraska, any other thoughts? Or nationally, anything you saw?
No, but just to tack on into the Nebraska thing, does that mean? I mean, they still played tough against Ohio State or whoever.
Yeah, they did. They did.
They still might have our number, I guess, is the fear, as much of a dumpster fire.
Yeah, in fact, the last couple years, they're
going to beat us, but the question is this. What those two just said is absolutely right. They've lost by less than a touchdown. They gave Ohio State a game for three quarters. The buck stops with you, and I understand, okay, then I'm going to fire people. But just what the fellas just said, your record is not indicative of how good you guys potentially could be. That's why I thought it was just such a boneheaded move. The players are going to be like, what the fuck? Those are the guys that recruit the players. The coach goes in there to do the final signing, but those are the guys. My buddy that played D1, he's like, when they had a coaching shift, it's like, I didn't come to play for this guy. He hated the new coach. I'm telling you, it's a train wreck. And I do think, I'll say it right now, unless things change, they will beat us, and I agree. They're actually a talented team, reasonably talented. And they've had a shit-tough schedule, too, but that's all I got to say about that.
Does anyone see that the USC-Cal game is canceled this weekend?
What? No.
COVID. Cal had 22 people out last week where they lost to Arizona. Arizona got their first win of the season, but Cal had 22 out, and they had more that tested positive after the game. So, yeah, we're finally, it's the first one we've seen this year as far as I know. I mean, we've seen some players that are out, but not many in terms of, college. I haven't seen much of anything, so. T. Bodie, we'll start with you on this one. What were your thoughts on the Northwestern game?
The fact that we let them hang around, and Friends even said, he goes, why did you guys get conservative? He goes, because we knew our – yeah, okay, but they still scored two touchdowns, So
– yeah, and but for – a blown pass, they could have scored a two-point conversion that really would have put them in it.
And I think we were talking how bad their running defense was, and yet, we let Tyler Goodson get 80 yards, or almost 100 yards in the first half, and granted a couple big plays, but he doesn't even touch the ball in the second half hardly.
Yeah, he got 40 yards.
You know?
Of course,
so,
and we did mix up it.
Yeah, and one, you know, he said, hey, we got the other running backs that put up some yards, and that's good. I'm glad they got in. You know, I'm glad we weren't afraid. I'm glad we're not afraid to put Padilla in as the starter this week.
Yeah. How about you, Andy? What are your thoughts? What were your thoughts?
Well, it's interesting how last year we lost our first two games, won our next six, and the whole is so positive. This team has the better record. They're 7-2. They just started well, and now they had two losses in the middle. And the difference in the whole fan base and the mentality, and, you know, Petras was like, hey, won six games in a row. But, yeah, it was good to see, you know, Padilla, he had two Power 5 offers. I know he's like 6'1", which is pretty short, but, you know, you'd think with Baker Mayfield and the kid from Oklahoma, forget his name.
Kyler Murray.
In the NFL.
Kyler Murray.
That height requirement's kind of going by the wayside. But, yeah, I mean, he gets back there and lets it fly. I like that.
Yeah, definitely.
What
about you, Brother Tommy? What were your thoughts on the game?
Love the fact that Padilla went in. Once again, I'm down on the coaches. So Padilla basically lights it up. In the second half, what do? We go into our prevent offense, which we always do. Coaching decisions that last two-minute drive at the end of the first half, typical Ferentz clock management. Should have gone for seven, didn't. Extremely too conservative, and one of these days it's going to bite them in the ass. Teams are going to come back. I'm sorry you don't run the ball three times with 6 minutes on the clock and then punt it when you're only up by eight. Thought it was ridiculous coaching. Very impressed with Padilla. I'm not saying anything bad or good about Goodson. I expect him to get 150 yards against Northwestern because they've only got the worst running defense in the Big Ten. I expect him to do that against Michigan and Ohio State type of teams. Maybe not 150, but 100. But, I mean, nothing bad about him. He did great. Don't get me wrong. But absolutely disgusted with the play calling again. And once again, I'm just the coaches, same thing, different day. Just rewind last week's show. I got nothing to add other than I like this Padilla guy. You can throw in short quarterbacks. You can throw Drew Brees into the mix. So I don't get too concerned about the height of the quarterback. Oh, and the other thing I will say about Padilla, there was a couple, maybe three different plays, would have been a 10-yard sack had Petras been in there because of Padilla's mobility. He kind of reminds me, and I know people have said it, but he kind of reminds me of Drew Tate, who happens to be my favorite Iowa quarterback in history.
Okay. Indy, do you think Padilla is a permanent solution, or do you think if Petras gets healthy that he comes back out?
I don't know. I just think, I don't know the answer to that. I think Iowa has to change mindsets. I mean, you see teams, what Purdue's alternating three quarterbacks, two quarterbacks. We lock in on a quarterback. We've done this historically. I mean, Ferentz, you know, was a Hayden Fry disciple. We had Brad Banks almost win the Heisman. He started 1 year for us.
Yeah.
So if you look at the transfer portal, you know, you can come to Iowa, but you got to get in line. You know, that's I don't know that that works with kids today. They're going to be gone. Like, I'm thinking of, like, Deuce Hogan right now. I noticed Iowa moved him up to number two. He seems to be – I followed him on Twitter. He was a big part of recruiting a lot of this class that was so good. Very good attitude, strong Christian. Georgia's head coach, what's his name, Kirby?
Yeah, Kirby Smart, yeah.
Kirby Smart. Landed his helicopter on the 50-yard line to try to talk Deuce Hogan into going to Georgia from after he committed to Iowa. I fear he's gone, but I'd like to see what he can do. I don't know that he'll get – I think he's probably – if I was advising him, if Padilla goes the rest of the way and they lock in on him and he's number – I think maybe they're trying to keep him interested, but we'll see.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think there's any easy way – Hogan's a freshman, redshirt freshman, I think.
Yes. Second year there.
Yeah. Brother Tommy, what your thought? You think Padilla is the permanent, or do you think we're going to default back to Petras?
I'll tell you what I think we're going to do. 6-5, pick them. What we should do, unquestionably, is go to Padilla. And I agree, maybe give Hogan a little bit of experience. I do not think it's be Petras. Had his shot. We need more mobility because of our line. You got a line like this, you need a mobile quarterback. I'm sorry. And plus, Petras, to me, it's just not there. Could be because of injury. I get it. Either way, it's not there. Coach's job is to win. It's very little else but to win, and I don't see them doing it. So I don't. I could see him putting Petras. I could see Padilla throwing for 400 yards, 6 touchdowns, and the following week, Farron putting Petras back out of loyalty or some weird thing that he has. But so I think 6-5 pick them on what they'll do. What they should do is keep Padilla in.
T. Bowdy, what do you think?
I like Padilla, but I understand exactly what Indy said. We should switch it up just a little bit. Let's take chances. Let's see what the other guys have during a season. Put this Hogan kid in. Don't alienate him.
Yeah.
But
I'm done.
I think
you're done what?
Spencer Petras has, I think Petras has run his course. So,
yeah.
And,
yeah, I feel for the kid, you know. But you know, here's the other thing. The play calling, I mean, almost the minute Padilla gets in, they had him throwing it, you know, and running play action and stuff. I think he gives, you know, like I said, I feel for Petras, but I think, you know, the one thing that Padilla gives you is the chance to move and run a different set. Now, you know, if we go into hibernation mode, that kind of blows all that out of the water. But, I mean, immediately there was a difference in the mindset, it appeared. You know, they just suddenly, I think our line still has problems. I think, you know, play calling is still puzzling at times.
Watch the replay of that game. Watch the replay of that game and look at the bounce in the steps of the receivers the minute Padilla came in. That tells me, like, oh, crap, I might get a pass. The bounce in the step and the energy on that offense when he came in went from C- to B+, the energy level. I'm just talking the energy level. It was amazing.
They have more faith.
I'm telling you, these players have more faith in Padilla than they do Petras, and that is just non-debatable.
Did you see his quote on Keegan Johnson? He said he's a game breaker. He's a playmaker. He's been working with him on the second team, so it took Padilla getting in there. He's like, I'm going to give him the ball whenever I can. So,
sure.
There's another positive.
A couple of them. Yep, it was beautiful.
Yeah, I mean, even, you know, the other thing is with Johnson and Bruce, Tracy was able to get some space. You know, Tracy had a couple of catches. I mean, we haven't seen Tracy have a multi-catch game this year, I don't think, you know, so that was good to see. So, Brother Tommy,
I'll tell you,
we'll
also
start with
long-term
you.
Ramifications, real quick, long-term ramifications.
Yeah.
If you bring Petras in, you're going to see, I said it last week, either Bruce and or Keegan go. You'll see. Keegan Johnson or Arlen Bruce will leave if Petras comes back in. At the end of the season, one or both of them will leave. Make bones in the NFL. You've got to catch passes. And they're like, I cannot catch passes with this guy. My problem.
Yeah. So, Brother Tommy, we'll start with you. What do you hope to see against Minnesota?
I hope to see what we did when Padilla came in the game. I want to see some rollout. I want to see some passing, so they can't stack the box. And then I want to go from pass to run. I don't want to do our typical two runs and a pass. I want to see pass to run. I want to come out on fire. I want to come out like it's the freaking Rose Bowl. This team does not have energy, and it's because of the coordinators. And not the coordinator, plural, excuse me, the coordinator offensive and his dad, Farron's plan. I want to see them come out and get aggressive. And I think with all the hoopla going on after the Northwestern game, I pray to God that they will. But I've seen this happen before, and they're probably going to come out and do the exact same damn thing. But what I want to see you come out aggressive. Don't try to win the game by 7. Try to win the game by 27. And don't set your foot off the pedal. That's what I want to see.
Yeah. Well, I mean, yeah, like I said, the play calling seemed to change when Padilla got in. It's like they make sure to give the quarterback
confidence.
No, but I'm saying, but initially they seem to want to give the quarterback, you know, the new quarterback confidence. So man, let them expand on it. So T. Bodie, what do you hope to see? What do you hope to see against Minnesota?
A win. Yeah, that's a you know what? We're favored. We're a better team. And just like what Brother Tom says, you know, some enthusiasm, some spark. And what I'm thinking, maybe did the play calling change because they thought, because Brian Ferentz gets too cute and he thinks, you know, he's got all these audibles and stuff that they leave with Petrus, you know, and then the backup quarterback comes in, and a lot of times the play calling, they dumb it down, so to speak. But working with those number two guys, like you're saying, and man, that play calling changed right then and there. Now, they went back to the conservative. They did, and they know they did.
Yeah.
I'd like to see some play calling.
Yeah, I mean, it just to me, and remember when Beathard would come in while Rudock was still the starter, Beathard would come in and, like, you know, the first or second play was a play action going deep. And you know, I think it's one, it's because they don't expect it. The coaches see that. They say, well, they're expecting us to go into hibernation mode. Well, then keep it out of hibernation mode. Don't go into it later. I mean, that's what I don't get, you know. But I think the play calling changed. I mean, you know, they went to deep on play action almost immediately. I'm not, you know, maybe they didn't feel comfortable doing it with Petrus. I mean, maybe they were trying to loosen him up, you know, if he'd been sore. I don't know that. That's the hard one to call. But damn, I mean, Indy, how about you? What do you want to see?
3 points in the second half against Northwestern. 3 points in the second half.
Yeah. Indy, what do you want to see?
I'll be a little bit different. I mean, I'd like to see us establish the running game. And what I mean by that is, you know, that's our staple. I mean, we've always been about a 50-50. I actually Googled how much teams run the ball. We are actually in the middle. There's like 130 teams. But all the big boys, Georgia, Ohio State, they are about, you know, 60% run versus pass. But, you know, if we're not going to be a run-first team, then I don't know why we'd have a fullback in there. I mean, if we go three wide or four wide. But, I mean, I like the two tight end sets and some. But I'd like to see us establish the run game and then do the play-action play, you know, pass like you guys are talking about. But.
Yeah, play-action doesn't work if your run's not working, you know. I mean, yes,
right,
the pass
exactly.
often sets up. I mean, the pass does set up the run. There's no doubt about that. But man,
right.
Without a good run game, without an effective run game, there's no. I mean, we saw it against Wisconsin. You know, we do it every year. We try to go to play action, and it's like the run doesn't work again for whatever reason. We
it is
can't
next
make
to
it work. What
next
Sorry?
To impossible to next to impossible to establish a run game with this offensive line until you establish a passing game. Because they're going to put eight in the box, but they always do, and we still run right up the middle, right tackle, left tackle, then a pass. You cannot establish with this. Give me the 202 line, yeah. 2002 line, yeah. We can establish a run game right away. If you think you're going to establish it without doing the pass first, you're out of your mind. Now, I think they're both out of their mind. I think that's what they'll end up doing. Business as usual, they're nuts.
Yeah. Okay.
That would be number one is to resolve the offensive line. You're not going to run the ball, obviously, if your offensive line isn't performing. But we got to get back to that. That's why Iowa football is a killer offensive line that could, you know, about 50-50 pass run.
Yep.
Offensive line is a big, big issue this year.
Yeah, and I'm not sure it's anything that's, you know, immediately solvable. But again, I think Alex
Padilla. That's why you want a mobile quarterback.
Yeah, I think Alex Padilla gives, you know, it's sort of like, you know, when we didn't have a run game in 2004 because every single running back pretty much was out, they utilized, you know, Drew Tate as the running back in a sense at times by using him as the mobile quarterback. And I think that's what Padilla gives that Spencer Petrus just does not right now. I mean, that's,
absolutely,
you know.
Absolutely, yep.
Okay, this next question is going to, I'll start with T. Bodie. This next question is going to seem weird, but You know, we talk about, you know, each who controls their own destiny. Do we want to, I mean, even if we win out, do we want to get to Indianapolis knowing what we would probably face there with this line and everything? Do we want to get to Indianapolis?
Yeah, I think you still got to have that as your goal. You can't, you know, say, oh, well, we're just going to get killed. You play the games. We beat Penn State. They were, you know.
Okay.
Yeah, we, of course we won.
Indy? I know this is different because it's coming to your backyard, but do we really want to see this team in Indianapolis on December 4th, Indy Hawk?
I can't believe the question. The party and the tailgate at the Indy Hawk bed and breakfast will be second to none. Of course we want to be good.
Tommy, do you want to see this? Do you relish the thought of seeing this team in Indianapolis?
I do, and I'll tell you why. That's the game we're not supposed to win. We're not going to Indianapolis. Let me make that perfectly clear. But absolutely, you want to do that. And think of Michigan and Ohio State, both within the last decade. For whatever reason, we come to play. And I'll tell you why it is, actually. The reason is we come and we're like, fuck it. What do we got to lose? We can't be conservative with these guys. So we're going to have to just wing it out. And that's what we did against Ohio State. Michigan was more a result of the when they were number three in the country, a result of we did have a good run game that game. But, no, absolutely I want to go to Indianapolis. And I'll actually be more positive about playing in Indianapolis than I am against Nebraska or anyone else in the West, because we're going to be in conservative mode when we play teams in the West.
Okay, fair enough. Fair enough. Okay. Brother Tommy,
I was just going to say, you know, our defense started out the year, and that's what carried us.
Yep.
You know, if that Evan was all over the field on Saturday, no one can deny it. They're writing about him. You know, he was a backup defensive end or something.
Yep.
Moss is supposed to be back. You know, Hankins started pumping up. Our defense can shut somebody down. They can have one more good game. Everybody's tune will turn again, and Iowa still has only got two losses. I think we can make it to Indy. I hope so, because I got a boss who bought me a ticket for $400.
Oh, really? So, yeah, you want to – and Indy Hawk wants the Indy Hawk bed and breakfast in full swing, obviously. So.
Yep.
So, okay, Brother Tommy, who are your four teams in the playoff?
Bama, Georgia, Cincinnati, and Michigan, just like last week.
Okay, I still don't know how you come up with Michigan, but you know what's
real quick. I'll tell you real quick. Ohio State beats Michigan State. Michigan beats Ohio State at home. That's all it takes. It's a different Michigan team. Ohio State's got a shitty run defense. That's how I come up with it. Now, those other two rule their own destiny. Michigan needs a little help, but they're going to get the help. All they got to have is Michigan State lose one more, and they play Ohio State, and then boom, they control their own destiny. All they got to do is beat Ohio State at home. That's how I come up.
Yeah, in terms of us getting to Indianapolis, that's the other thing. Is that, you know, Purdue's got Ohio State this weekend. Now they've historically played them very tough, but if Ohio State runs wild,
don't worry about Wisconsin. That's our only worry. Wisconsin needs to lose one more time, and if we run it, then we go. It's that simple.
Okay. So, Indy Hawk, who are your four playoff teams?
I'll take OSU, Georgia, Alabama, and Oregon. Pretty boring.
Okay. I'm not sure how people are seeing both Bama and Georgia in it at this point, but T-Bow, who
Bama
are
beat Georgia. Number one team. Georgia drops to four.
Okay. T-Bowdy, who are your four?
Well, I was just going to comment because, like you just said, Georgia and Alabama play each other, right? And Georgia's going to win that game pretty much, is what everyone's saying, right? So Alabama has two losses. Do they put an Alabama
in ahead?
Bama won't go if
Georgia wins. You're right about that.
Do they put a two-loss Alabama in ahead of an undefeated Cincinnati that's been undefeated now for almost 3 years?
No, they do not. And my only scenario, just quick clarification, my scenario is predicated on the fact that Alabama beats Georgia in the SEC championship game. That's my scenario. You're right. If Bama loses, they're not going.
I've agreed with you, Tommy, right up to now. And right up till now, I think, you know what? I think Cincinnati's, I don't know. I kept thinking they'll get beat. I think Oregon's going to get beat. I know Oklahoma's going to put in. So my four,
Georgia,
Alabama, Ohio State, and gosh, I don't know. It's going to be either Cincinnati or Oregon, and I'll just say Cincinnati. Where's I had last
okay.
week.
Okay. Mine are Georgia, Ohio State, Oregon, and Cincinnati. I had Cincinnati back in it with Michigan State losing. That was my – I had two Big Ten teams in. I had Michigan State beating Ohio – or losing to Ohio State, but that being their only loss. Their loss to Purdue pretty much blows that out of the water. So I'm going Georgia,
yeah.
OSU, Oregon, and Cincinnati. Okay, prediction time. Last week, T. Bodie and – Indy Hawk both finished 12-2. T. Bodie was the only guy that picked A&M. Indy Hawk picked Purdue. I went 11-3 with my Illinois pick. Brother Tommy and Mike went 9-5. So actually 9-5 in most weeks would be a good week. But we all nailed the Hawks, and we correctly guessed that there would be more than one touchdown by our offense, amazingly enough. So... you know,
there
not a bad
some
week.
Of those,
what?
If you look at some of those games,
yeah,
they could have gone either way in the last 2 minutes. You know, you think
yeah,
about Wake
oh, yeah.
Forest. And
that was the one that surprised me. I had Wake. I just didn't see UNC beating them. I think UNC's been a disappointment this year. So 58-55, that's a Big 12 score. I mean, that's, you know. So, anyway, we're going to start with North Carolina at Pitt. Pitt's a 6.5-point favorite. So, Brother Tommy, we'll start with you.
Pitt.
T. Bodie.
North Carolina coming off that big win. Pitt's been good. For the reasons that Tom always picks a team that comes off a big win to lose the following week, I will take Pitt.
Okay. Mike is not picking. He said he might send his stuff later. Indy, who are you taking that game?
I'm going to go Pitt. There's not a lot of defense. I had North Carolina last week. My goodness. That was a ping pong match.
Yeah, it was. And it'd be brutal if you're a coach on the sidelines for that game, that's for sure. I'm going with Pitt as well, so we're all unanimous there. Okay, this next one, Brother Tommy, you're first up. Oklahoma at Baylor. Oklahoma is favored by 5.5.
Baylor.
Okay. T. Bodie.
I think Oklahoma's going to lose, but I don't think this is the game. I'll stay with Oklahoma.
Okay. Indy.
This one's interesting. Baylor just allowed 461 yards. I'm looking at something here, but I'm going to go Oklahoma, but this should be a good game. Baylor could easily
yeah.
win, but I'll take Oklahoma.
Yeah, I'm going to take Oklahoma too. I think this is not their game to lose. I think they somehow pull it off. I think Baylor is a good team, but I don't think they're – if Oklahoma's at their best, I don't think Baylor's there. Texas A&M at Ole Miss. Ole Miss is being given – so A&M is favored by 2.5. Brother Tommy.
Ole Miss. You can see I'm going upset today. I'm going to have to do something.
Okay. T. Bodie.
That should actually be a pretty good game if I was a SEC fan, which I'm not, so I won't watch it. But I'm going to go with Texas A&M.
Okay. Indy.
Hey, can I ask a quick question, Hank,
yeah.
real quick?
Yeah.
This might be a monkey wrench into my thing. Does A&M – only have one SEC loss? I know they've got two losses. Are they both SEC? Because Bama doesn't even go to the championship game if they've got only one SEC loss, if A&M runs it, because they beat them head-to-head. I didn't even think of that. I know they got two losses. I just don't know if they're both in the SEC. That's a Google I can look up later. Might
yeah,
change my final four next week.
There's some pundits way smarter than us that have Texas A&M going.
That's interesting.
Oh, so let's quickly look it up. I mean, it's
yeah, just Google Texas A&M, and then I can even say it. I think. Let me see.
Yeah, so, well, you're right. I didn't think about that. If A&M runs the table,
Texas
the rest of the
A&M
rest of...
football.
Yeah, I got it right now. Pulling up right here. Yeah, I know. I didn't need to know that shit. All right, hold on. Okay, I got it right here. See,
oh, so they're showing you the whole history of...
Yeah, I can
No, they've got two losses in the SEC. They've lost to Arkansas.
Okay, they are both
SEC.
Okay, that's what I thought. I didn't know if one of them was non-conference. Okay, good.
Yeah,
that's
Arkansas
that.
And Mississippi State.
Okay,
so.
Yeah.
Okay. Indy, how about you?
All right, I'm going A&M fairly easily. Ole Miss has given up a lot of yards on the ground, and that's what the Aggies do well. So I think it's – I think – A&M wins this by a couple touchdowns.
Really? Okay. Because it's at Ole Miss, and Ole Miss tends to do well at home. But, you know, I just – other than their loss to – well, no, that was at Auburn 2 weeks ago. So, I just don't – this is a tough one for me. I think I'm going to go with Ole Miss. I'm going to join Brother Tommy. I just think there's something that says to me that, you know, they need a win here. So okay. Brother Tommy, Notre Dame at Virginia. Notre Dame is a 5.5-point favorite.
Virginia, you can see I'm going with dogs all day today so far. So I'm sure next week I'm going to be 4-8, but hell with it, Virginia. Plus, I hate Notre Dame, so there's some emotion there.
Okay. T. Bodie.
Well, I don't have a real reason. I'm always anti-Notre Dame, but I'm going to take Notre Dame.
Okay, fair enough. Indy.
Yeah, I want to go Virginia, but I'm going to go Notre Dame. Evidently, Virginia's quarterback has an injury, but he's likely to play, but they don't know for sure. But I think Notre Dame probably wins.
Yeah, they did not. Virginia did not look good against BYU, I guess. So, North Carolina State at Wake Forest.
Well,
Forest.
Who are you taking? Wait, you didn't say who you were taking.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm taking Notre Dame.
Okay.
So, North Carolina State at Wake Forest. Wake is a 2-point favorite. Brother Tommy.
Now, this is the one I struggled with. I don't like the line. The line is deceiving. Wake should be a 6-point favorite.
Is that at Wake Forest?
Yeah, it's at Wake Forest.
And I, you know what? But they're right down the street from each other, so the home field advantage ain't that big. Now, this one I'm going to kick myself for. I know I am, but so be it. North Carolina State.
Okay. T. Bodie.
I guess we're just going to have further separation this week there, Brother Tom. I'm going to stay with Wake Forest to bounce back.
Indy.
Yeah, I fucked that one up, truth be told, but I'm sticking with my pick.
Not so fast, Indy. Tommy.
Oh, good.
No.
I get some support.
I'm
get some Corso support. I like that.
I found out this week that Wake Forest is the smallest D1 school. So I'm going NC State. Wittenberg at the buzzer.
Wittenberg at the buzzer.
Take down those Houston, whatever they're called. What is Houston basketball? Houston Cougars.
Yeah.
Well, I'm surprised Wake Forest is smaller than Northwestern. That surprises me.
No, I'm going Wake Forest as well. I'm joining T. Bodie in this one. I think Wake is a good team, but they got caught in a shootout with North Carolina. Okay, Brother Tommy, first up on this, Arkansas at LSU. Arkansas is a 2.5-point favorite.
They're playing good ball. When in doubt, I go home. LSU.
T. Bodie.
Yeah, you know, LSU played Alabama. Or was it Alabama they played last week? Georgia?
Yes.
Whoever they played, they played pretty tough.
Alabama.
And Arkansas is disappointing every time I've taken Arkansas. So I'm going to stay with LSU.
Okay. Indy.
Now, this one's tough. Orgeron's still there, right?
Yeah.
No, for the rest of the
kids
season.
Are.
So the kids will be at the game. I'm going to – they may rally around it. I'm going to go Arkansas. I think they're kind of disoriented.
Arkansas is a tough team, actually. They are tough.
Yeah, they are a good team. I'm going with Arkansas because I just don't see LSU maintaining momentum and consistency and having not enough guys to practice half the time. Okay, here's kind of a sleeper game. Miami at Florida State. Miami is a 2.5-point favorite. Brother Tommy.
This one pisses me off. I don't like the line, but I fell for that bullshit last week, and Florida State got manhandled. I don't like the line. I think Miami should be favored by 13. I don't fucking understand it, but I didn't understand last week's line, and Florida State got manhandled. I'm going to do the dumbest thing. I'm just going to sit. T-Body or I are going to have major separation after this week. I don't know why the hell I'm doing this. Florida State.
T-Body.
Yeah. I think Miami kind of is finding some pieces to their puzzle. And did I hear that someone in the transfer portal, a quarterback, just went down to Miami?
Maybe. Not sure.
I don't know. Andrew. I'm going to go with Miami. I think that I don't know. I heard some guy talking from the ACC how they're going to be the top team next year and that they're going to finish strong this year. So I'll use it. We'll go with that.
Indy.
This game has a little different meaning than it did in the 80s, huh, guys?
Yeah, okay.
Ernie Coase.
Neon Deion.
I'm going to go Miami.
Okay. I'm joining Brother Tommy with Florida State. I think Miami is they're not Nebraska bad, but they're Nebraska overrated.
Yeah, but what about Florida State? Have they even won a game this year?
Yeah, they're like 3-6 right now, I think, or
oh,
3-5.
Oh, I stand corrected. They've won three whole games.
Three.
but it's at
Got
Florida
off
State. It's at Florida State. I just think Florida State somehow pulls it off. Okay, Brother Tommy, here we go. Iowa State at Texas Tech. Iowa State is a 10.5-point favorite.
Iowa State. No explanation.
T-Bodie.
Yeah, you know, Iowa State's, you know, playing well. God bless them. When do you think, and I don't know if you have Texas in any of the games here for us, Hank, but do you think Texas is going to lose 5 games in a row? Because Iowa State blew the shit out of them, 30 points on them or something.
Yeah, no doubt.
I'll stick with Iowa State.
Indy.
Well, Texas is a joke. I'm gonna go.
Texas Tech, isn't it, Bob or Hank?
Yeah, but
it's Texas
but yeah, it is. But
Texas, but
but they beat up on Texas.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
I'm gonna go Clones on this. There'll be very little defense played.
So you are going with the Clones, okay?
Yep.
Yeah, I hate to go against them at this point. I think they do. I think they pull it out. Okay, now we're into the Big Ten. Brother Tommy, Michigan at Penn State, and this is in as even.
Yep. It's a very, very close game. I obviously, since I did my predictions, are obviously going to go with Michigan, but this should be an even game. This is anybody's game. But I'm going
okay.
with
Michigan. T-Bodie.
I agree. It's anybody's game because it's at Penn State. Gosh, Michigan. I think Michigan's got a good team, and I think Penn State might not be the team. I think they're like Iowa. They might not be the team. I'm staying with Michigan.
Okay. Indy.
I'm even going to give you a score on this one, Hank. I'm going Michigan 3, Penn State 2.
Well, you know,
I thought that was going to be the Iowa Minnesota score.
I thought, you know, I'm wondering if I could hold you to that. But no, I agree. I think Michigan's just a better team. I mean, I think Penn State, good team. You know, certainly had Iowa, you know, on the ropes, but I think they're not. I don't know how Michigan lost to Michigan State having a 16-point lead. I've read now that the officials did admit to Harbaugh that they got a couple calls wrong, so maybe it wasn't all their fault. But I know we shouldn't be playing lawyer ball, but still. I'm going with Michigan. I just don't think Penn State's as good as advert, you know, as they were touted at one point. Okay, Brother Tommy, Northwestern at Wisconsin, who is a 24.5-point favorite.
I'm going with Northern. No, just joking, fellas. Wisconsin. No, nothing needs to be said.
Yeah.
Wisconsin.
T. Bodie.
Well, unlike Iowa, Wisconsin knows when they've got a good rushing offense and they're playing a bad rushing defense, how to work. So they're going to do that, and it's at Wisconsin. So I got Wisconsin.
Yeah. Okay. Indy.
I'm going Wisconsin also, but I hope to God I'm wrong. That'd be awesome.
I know. That really would
be great if Northwestern beats them.
I'm going Wisconsin also. Oh, I think the jump around will be the difference. I really do. The jump around will put them over the top. Rutgers at Indiana. Indiana is a 7-point favorite. Brother Tommy.
Up one to call here, too. Indiana needs a break. They shit the bed this season. I say that they try to save face. Indiana.
T. Bodie.
Yeah, I kind of agree. You know, Rutgers is not as good as they started out, and Indy must have something. Must have. So I got Indy.
Yeah. Indy, your call.
Well, I'm going to go with IU, the former top 25 team that, if you recall, I picked us to beat along with the Clones and still only win 7-8 games. So I'm not high on them, but I think they win this one.
Yeah, I agree. I think they desperately need this one. I think I don't want to say that that anyone's fighting for their job per se, but Tom Allen's fighting for his job. I think it boils down to that. I think
he was the flavor of the month.
He sure was.
3 months ago, he was flavor of the month, and now he's fighting for his job.
Yep.
Welcome
exactly.
to college sports, fellas.
Yep, exactly. Okay, Brother Tommy, Purdue at Ohio State. Ohio State, a 20-point favorite.
Ohio State, wow. But Purdue covers. Yeah, I know. I saw that line, too. If I had money to bet, I would load up on Purdue to cover the spread, but Ohio State wins the game.
Okay. T. Bodie.
Yeah, you know what? I think that's a sucker's bet. I think that they sat there and people are watching saying Purdue's going to play with Ohio State, and everyone's going to take Purdue in those points, and Ohio State's going to win by 30.
Okay. Indy Hawk.
How about that defense and Purdue's receiver? They're not.
Yeah, I know. So it's just like you. I'm thinking how the bookies are thinking.
Yeah. Indy,
I think it's a crazy line. But, yeah, you're absolutely right. Florida State in the 90s. I would see lines of 28. I would always bet the other team to cover. Guess what? Florida State won by 38, you know? So, yeah, you're right. It's a line that, yeah, if I arbitrage the lines, you're right. I should probably be betting Ohio State. But, yeah, I'm sorry, Hank. Go ahead.
Indy Hawk, who's your coach?
Did you guys are Bears fans, kind of, pseudo. Did you see Fields last night or Monday night?
Yeah, they got speaking of lawyer ball, they got some bad calls, the Bears did.
They did get some bad calls, but I'll tell you what, that guy for a rookie came out and he lit it up.
Yeah. And it's not like he's got an all-star cast around him either. Justin Fields for the Bears.
Ohio State quarterback. I didn't know he was with the Bears. I don't follow pro football. Okay.
So, Indy, who are you going with in this one?
All right. You guys may not know this, but I'm big into numerology. So Purdue beats number 2 Iowa. Then they beat number 3 Michigan State. Now they play number 4 Ohio State.
Oh, wow.
Hello. Yeah, I'm just messing with you. It's Ohio State.
Yeah.
With that methodology in Vegas.
Yeah, absolutely. But, yeah, I think, real quick,
remember that Cheers episode? Remember that Cheers episode when Woody kept on getting all the games? And they're like, Woody's a freaking genius. Did I say this last week? Woody's a genius. So they all, so in the Cheers episode, Woody keeps on winning week after week after week. So they expansion Tampa Bay Buccaneers versus the Oakland Raiders, who were the powerhouse then. Woody says Tampa Bay. And they're all like, what? Well, let's put our money on Tampa. Woody's been hot as hell.
Then they finally ask him, hey, Woody, what's your strategy? He says, oh, I just go by the which helmet I like better.
Yeah.
That's exactly how it works. So, okay, guys, just so you know, we're going to catch up real quick. Mike just sent me a text. So we're going to get his picks in here. I think it's only fair. He's going with Pitt.
I thought he was sending his in on Sunday.
No.
Yeah, right.
So he's going with Pitt, Oklahoma, ND. So I'm doing this mainly for the benefit of T-Bodie.
T-Bodie likes to write them down, yeah.
Yeah.
And that's, incidentally, so, T-Bodie, that's awesome when you send that stuff. Great.
I'm serious. I love it. Because I never write it down. I should.
It's Jamie doing it.
He went Pitt, Oklahoma, ND. He didn't pick the Ole Miss game, so I don't know what he's going to do there. But so, well, we'll just
that's
have to say that's a loss. It's an automatic loss. He went with ND. He went with – I don't think he went – let's see. Who did he pick after ND? I think he missed a couple games.
He picked
Arkansas over LSU.
I can talk to that.
Yeah. He picked Miami, so you know he got that working for him. And he picked the Clones. He picked the Clones. He picked.
That's all just what Mike picked. He's predictable.
Yeah, he picked. He picked Michigan over Penn State. He picked Northwestern. I'm kidding. He did not pick Northwestern. Nobody
that
does that. He picked Wisconsin. He picked Indiana, and he picked Ohio State. So we're now at our second-to-last game.
So he's missing Wake Forest, North Carolina State.
Yeah, and I'll send him in the text. So he's got Ohio State.
He's also missing Ole Miss, isn't he?
Yeah.
Yep.
He's missing the Ole Miss, A&M, and Wake, North Carolina State. So, Brother Tommy, we're at – Michigan State hosting Maryland. Michigan State is a 13-point favorite.
Michigan State.
T-Bodie?
That's Maryland at Michigan State?
Yeah.
Yeah, Michigan State.
Mike picks Michigan State. Indy, how about you?
I'm taking Michigan State unless we're playing against the spread.
No, we're just picking straight up, so...
I know.
And then next up, our final
Hank,
one.
Where are you?
I'm on Michigan State. Yeah,
and where were you with Ohio State?
Ohio State.
Yeah, you didn't do that one.
I almost took Indy's numerology, but no, I decided no. So
all right.
We're at it. We're at now Minnesota at Iowa. Iowa is a 5.5-point favorite, so let's just assume they don't cover win or lose. So here's what I want. I want who's going to have more passing yards in this game, Alex Tanner Morgan or Alex Padilla? And Brother Tommy, first, who wins the game, Minnesota or Iowa?
This is a game time decision for me. I will go with only because I need to keep the faith. I'm going with Iowa.
And who has more yards passing, Tanner Morgan or Alex Padilla?
And there again, keeping the faith, Alex Padilla.
Okay. T-Bodie.
Yeah, Iowa and Padilla.
Really?
Hey, but
Mike?
I got a question, though, Hank.
Yeah.
We all picked who we thought was going to be the player of the game last week. How was that determined?
I'd have to pull it up. It wasn't our player of the game. That wasn't part of our picking. Our picking was our tiebreaker was touchdowns. Does Iowa get two offensive touchdowns or more? Which you know that's why you and
Alex Padilla though.
Oh, we all picked Alex Padilla as player of the game. No two ways about it. Indy, how about your pick? Mike is going with the Hawks and Padilla.
I'm going with Hawks and Padilla. Is it Padilla or Hogan? Padilla. I'll go Padilla. Hawks.
It might be Hogan. It could be Hogan. You never know.
Yeah, it's true.
4-3 in this one.
4-3, and Padilla still gets more yards than Tanner Morgan. I'm going the Hawks,
yes.
But I'm gonna go with Tanner Morgan because I think right now Minnesota can't run very well. They don't have they're down to like their fifth string running. But they've channeled the 2004 Hawks to run their offense. So Morgan's going to have to throw. Padilla won't have to. I don't think so. I'm going to Iowa, but I'm going Tanner Morgan getting more yards. So. Okay, so that's we got our picks in. Okay, here's a final question, and we'll start with T. Bodie since he won. You know, he's. Oh wait a second. Do you have the overall lead, T. Bodie?
Well, I do. I did text that one out, but right now, overall by percentage, at 48-30 is Brother Tom, 61.5%.
Okay.
Indy is just ahead of him at 62%. He hasn't picked quite as many games. He's 36-22. And then, I started out wrong. It was Hawkeye Mike that's in last place there at 61.5. Brother Tom is right in the middle of the pack at 55.5. 127. And then Hank and you and I are kind of close, but it's still a percentage. You're at 44-21. With 68%, and I'm at 54-24.
And what was your percent?
69.
Okay, so I'm in second place then.
We got about a percent and a three quarters that separate us.
Okay. Okay. Well, let's I'll take it. So that's where we. We got
just for the record, I've fired all the assistant coaches that are helping me pick these games.
Oh, you have? Okay, well that's good to know. That's good to know. I'm letting defensive coordinator pick all mine now. I'm letting defensive coordinator pick mine. So is that what he's doing, T. Bodie? He's literally using the grad assistants. He's elevating them.
I think so. Yeah, that's what they said. Basically, those guys, they already took heat for the fact. And I think it's a fine or a self-imposed fine because those grad assistants were being paid or something as assistant coaches. But, yeah, I think they're all getting elevated for the remainder of the season.
So those four are gone?
Yeah,
not the end of the year. They're gone now.
Yeah, they're gone now. They're gone effective immediately.
Yep.
Oh, that's unprecedented.
Yep. Yeah, I mean that's just, talk about a guy that's desperate to to keep his job. It makes you wonder if he met with Trev Alberts. I think it makes you wonder if he.
I think they're forced to make him make a decision on something.
Yeah.
So they had the show.
Let me ask you guys the dumbest question in the world. It is not the same Trev Alberts that used to be on TV, is it?
It is.
It is indeed.
He played for Nebraska.
Shit. I did not know it was the same one.
He was actually a boxing guy.
He was a boxing guy, if I recall.
No, he was a linebacker. He grew up in Iowa, but he went to Nebraska. But he was the
Didn't he do all the boxing matches?
No, that's Marv Albert.
Oh, okay. My bad. Okay, that's what I was thinking. All right. Cool. All right.
It's Steve Albert.
I need to keep my sanity here. Yeah. Okay,
yeah.
Got it.
No, the Trev Alberts, it's not Albert, it's Alberts, I think, and he was the athletic director at Nebraska Omaha, and literally, like, he canceled a couple of their programs, like their Division II wrestling championship, and they came home from winning it, and he canceled it, I think. Something like that. And then he canceled, I think, their football program in the middle of, right after their season or something. He just and somehow he parlayed that into the Nebraska athletic directorship. And You know, I don't want to get down on him too much because he was very much pro Iowa in 2002 through 2004. If you remember, the day after the Capital One Bowl, when he was on television, they were talking about Iowa's win. He said, "Look, Kirk Ferentz is the best college football coach out there, and it's not even close." You know, he might have been wrong on that, but you know, he was.
You could have made that argument in 2004, 2005. I was telling Hawkeye Mike, I think it was he and I were going back and forth. I think Kirk Ferentz deserves a statue. I really do. I don't think, however, fit for the for today's game. But you give me 2002 to 2018, I got no gripes. But
yeah.
He's no, or 2016 probably. He's just no longer fit for the game.
Yeah. So there's been a couple of years this year. You know,
I'm sorry, you broke up there for a second. What'd you say, T-Buddy?
There was a couple of those years in there where Ferentz had a down years where everybody was wanting him out the door. So for
and I was one of them. I was one of them. I'll admit it. When we were preseason number one and we ended up going 6-6 and losing to Western Michigan on homecoming or senior day, whatever. Yeah, I was one of them.
Yep.
These
no two ways about
men
it.
Are going to be very good adults in life, and a lot of them have gone to the pros. So he's done something right. I don't know.
Oh,
I don't
know
if I
no doubt. So
quick question.
You know.
Another question you were saying about coaches, and what I was, you know, grad assistant coaches. When you're a player, you don't know between a grad. You don't know. You don't pay attention what the coaches are getting paid or who's not getting paid. Stuff. You just see these guys that are older telling you what to do, and so those guys are assistants, but they're going to be bummed. But they still have all these DAs that are, in many cases, better than the assistant coaches.
No, but the missing link here, or the factor that people aren't considering, is most of these players were offensive players were recruited by these offensive these offensive coaches that were let go. That's the bond. That's the bond. It's not. There's really not a bond between player. This is what my buddy told me. There's really not much of a bond between player and head coach. But the guy that recruits you, with the generally speaking a coordinator, that's the bond. And it's, you know, and my buddy played with Brewster. I mean, I can name all the names. Under Mike White, Callahan, who I think went to Nebraska, with all of them. And he had his coordinator taken away. And he said, it just devastates the guys. Because, like, whoa, that's the guy that they came here for. Let him go. So I'm just saying that the psychological factor there is real.
Yeah. I mean, head coaches, the head coach, you know, Tyler Goodson's mom said it, you know, the head coach deals more with the parents than the position coaches, although the position coaches do as well. But, you know, it's the head, you know, it's like they say, the parents said, would you want
your analogy with the mom? It's your analogy with the mob. The soldiers don't deal with the Don. They just don't.
Yeah, they deal with their capo and all that stuff, and it's the same thing. I mean, it's players. And I think, you know, that's the thing. I mean, how do you – I don't know if they have a quarterback coach or if the offensive coordinator was the quarterback coach, but Adrian Martinez has got to be freaked out. I mean, you know, he's a good player. He's just made some stupid mistakes at the worst times. But he, you know, for all his faults, he's also what's kept them competitive for most of this season. I mean, he runs well. He's not a bad passer. For him to walk in and see that, you know, basically the whole offensive coaching staff is gone. You know,
this year Martinez is going to give us fits. We have a problem with running quarterbacks. Martinez is going to give us fits.
I don't know if you guys know any, you know, Nebraska fans, but the over-under on how many Heismans he would win when he came in, he was like the savior of the program. It was like 1.5, so they figured he'll win at least one, maybe two.
Well, who was the guy that, Beano Cook, that said Ron Paulus would win 4 Heismans at Notre Dame, and I think by the time he was a sophomore, he wasn't even starting anymore or something, so... Didn't he transfer to
That was supposed to be a first top 10 pick for Notre Dame, Clausen or something like that, and he ended up going to the third round.
Jimmy Clausen, I mean, it's legendary
Cook was the coach at South Dakota before Triplett when I went there. Triplett was the coach.
Really?
Cook done well.
I liked his stuff on ESPN. I thought he was fine, but, you know, he's. obviously, you know, he's the game, you know, he's older now. So obviously that's, you know, that's one factor. So anyway, hey guys, thanks for being here. We got to sign off, but thanks for being here again, Indy Hawk and T Bodie and Brother Tommy. Thanks for being in. Thanks for the picks. Go Hawks this Saturday. I don't know. I don't know what to think. This is what, I mean, every game now, I just don't know what to think, where we're looking at. So
one at a time.
You all have a great weekend.
Okay, you guys all have a good weekend, and we're going to sign off with a little with some tunage. So we will talk next week. Yep. Brother Tommy, were you going to say something?
No.
I was waiting for your sign-off song. You got my aroused my curiosity.
Oh, it's not your song. Don't worry. It's just a regular.
Oh, I know
regular
it's not that. Up. I'm not that fan.
So, okay, guys, we'll talk to you next week.
Hendrix?
Jeff Beck,
that's right. We always loved Jeff Beck. Jeff Beck never did anything.
I'm out.